intestine. Is this getting on? Welcome back to Game Pain Watch Stories. This is a podcast where we talk about what.
Thanks, buddy. Today I'm joined by Matthew Bartlett, a public affairs expert from Nashua, New Hampshire, who has some fun stories from his time in the first presidential primary state. Matthew, it's good to meet you, man. How's it going today?
Doing all right. Great to join you. I'm here in overcast DC, but I don't know. Is it sunny down there in the Palmetto State?
You know, I haven't been outside since I walked in this office this morning, but I think it's about 70 degrees and sunny out there. Maybe I can actually get out from behind this computer here shortly and go enjoy it.
Well, either way, I'm sure it's better than the weather in New Hampshire, which I've just been in for the past at least month and more like 9 months up there.
What were you doing in New Hampshire? Who were you working for?
Well, this time around, the New Hampshire primary, New Hampshire Olympics, I'm happy to say that I did not have a T-shirt or have to hold a sign or have to send out any sort of press release or coalitions list. I was unaligned in this primary, so I got up there to just have some fun, like any other Granite State voter.
So you literally, are you from New Hampshire?
I am from New Hampshire.
Okay. That makes more sense. I was like, are you just going up there just for the shits and giggles of the primary?
Let me tell you, yes, it is my drug of choice. Absolutely. Yeah. New Hampshire primary was my ticket out of New Hampshire. And to this day, you know, remains like a big focal point in my life.
So what do you do when you're up there if you're not working for someone? You're just up there partying?
Yeah, we're up there getting high, right? For people like you or me or others, you know, going to these events, going to these rallies, you know, it's democracy on display. It's you know, down here in this town, people are treated like kings and queens, or you go to a state capital, and it's something, and then you go to New Hampshire, and boy, it's different. You know, people are very down to earth. It's like, great, you're a senator, great, you're a governor, and you know, you get to see people develop and maybe, you know, you get the next president, whoever him or her is. And it's just quite an experience. So I love it.
So were you bouncing around to all different candidates, to their rallies and such? Did you get to see everybody?
Yeah. I mean, I've been up there, you know, for over a year, with just split time between New Hampshire and DC, going up to Nikki events, Pence events, you know, Trump forums, rallies, was in a diner with him. You know, DeSantis was with him every step of the way in New Hampshire. Tim Scott, and it, you know, it's just a lot of fun, with a whole bunch of people, and then the press corps too. You know, interesting to say the least.
It has been relatively quiet here for the past week. I thought that, you know, we're down to two, right? So the circus isn't quite as big, but I thought there would be a lot more activity happening in South Carolina. Maybe they're holding their powder. I will tell you that I'm getting blown up multiple times a day from reporters asking my opinion on the South Carolina primary. But for now, it's been a lot more quiet than I expected it to be.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very weird cycle, right? We've never seen an incumbent president, for all intents and purposes, in the Republican Party run. And then, you know, just to have a dominant force, and it's been a very, you know, hard for other candidates to break through. And now we're down to two, but it almost seems like maybe ran out of runway even before South Carolina. You know, so yeah, weird time.
The other thing is, I don't recall there being a full month between New Hampshire and South Carolina in the past. Typically, it's like 2 weeks. I think this is a lot longer than what we're used to.
Yeah, you might be right. You might be right. And, you know, you would know better than me on how it goes down. I've had a little bit of fun down there in South Carolina. But yeah, I know. What do they say? You know, Iowa picks corn. New Hampshire picks presidents. South Carolina picks pockets. It tends to be an interesting state that you would know more than me. A street fight, a drag out, you know, all across the state. So, yeah.
The question I'm getting more than anything from reporters right now is South Carolina as dirty as people say it is?
And well, I'm interested to hear your take, because I have a little twist on that, too.
Well, my take is it used to be. And I think the internet has created a new level of dirty politics that wasn't anywhere. The South Carolina just doesn't look as bad as it used to because it's just gross everywhere.
Sure. Well, boy, that's a deep and depressing, dark way of looking at it. It was like, no, everything's just gotten so much worse that we're just normal now. But, you know, were you around back in the 2000 race with McCain and Bush?
I'm from here. So
right.
So I came up in politics in South Carolina, and I've only lived out of South Carolina a few times, and that was for political campaigns, but I've been here my whole life.
Right. So what, I mean, everyone in DC, everyone in Hampshire talks about how Bush planted this story on McCain of a, you know,
the black baby.
Right. Now, my take is, and I'm interested to hear your take, I don't think that happened. In fact, I think I know and even worked with one of the guys on the McCain side that probably created this controversy or story and blamed the Bush campaign, is my take. Because I worked with him in a different capacity and something very similar happened.
So South Carolina, the dividing lines in the Republican Party were very much the McCain and Bush lines here. And for lack of a better term, I came up through the Bush side of that, the Bush family. And that was like the Warren Tompkins crowd and Bush versus like the Quinn crowd that was doing the McCain side. And I will tell you that coming up through that and spending a lot of personal time with everybody involved in that campaign, they always denied it. And these are guys that would go out drinking and brag about the stuff they would do. They always denied the black baby thing. But that goes to my point about the internet. Like, a black baby rumor would be just on Twitter every day. You know, someone called me about, I used to have an internet show called Pub Politics very early in live streaming days. And a state senator came on that show and was drunk. We always had politicians drinking, but he was drunk before he came on the show. I think he had had a few shots of bourbon and he was drinking Budweiser's on the show. And that's when Nikki Haley was running for governor. And he called Nikki Haley.
Oh, Jake.
Yeah. Yeah, Jake? Jakey Knotts. Jakey Knotts.
Jake, that's Jakey being Jakey. I remember that in 2010.
And he called Nikki Haley a raghead. And all hell ensued, you know, became a national story. I don't even know if I can say that, but that, I'm quoting him. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if I say the R word. I don't know how else you say it. Okay. But
smart. Point taken.
So anyway, the Boston Globe calls me yesterday and asked me, it's like, is South Carolina still that dirty? I'm like, what are you talking about? If you get on Twitter right now, you'll probably see 25 people calling Nikki Haley that. Like, yeah. You see, my point is like, it's all that bad now. So I don't see South Carolina as any different from the rest of the country.
Yeah, I mean, listen, fair point. I mean, you have the South certainly changed. You had Nikki as governor. You had an African-American senator, Lindsey Graham. So, yeah, times have changed in some ways for the better and some ways maybe not.
And speaking of my internet show, Pub Politics, one of the better episodes we had that hacked out. So we basically every Wednesday, it was known as like the happy hour thing everybody had to do. And we'd always pack out a bar. One of our biggest ones was whenever John Huntsman's daughters actually came on the show. And I think were you doing that campaign at that time?
Yeah, I was on Team Huntsman. You know, was in DC and met with John Weaver and John Huntsman at his house here in DC and headed home to New Hampshire for what was a very rocky road in the Granite State. Incredibly proud, you know, to be on that campaign. Learned a lot what to do, maybe what not to do. Think the world of the governor and his family, still talk to them. But maybe some of the other folks I worked with get the hairy eyeball.
So how did you get into politics?
Yeah, again, born and raised in Nashua, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. So southern part of the state, was something of an HIV AIDS activist. And, you know, I graduated college in the year 2000. There was a lot of movement going on globally, you know, a continent on fire. Then there was a notion of like the Pope and some of the guys, politically, paying attention to some of these bigger things. You had some strange things going on, whether it was Jesse Helms talking about poverty and HIV AIDS. So it was an activist and people would come to New Hampshire and I would ask questions and I would host Bill Frist. I was a Democrat, would host Bill Frist. He would come to New Hampshire and I would say, what about debt relief? He said, we did that. And I would say, what about multilateral debt relief? And he'd go, who do you work for? And at the time I sold windows and siding in the North Shore of Massachusetts.
Oh, you're kidding.
But was always active. Bono, the guy from U2, his organization called one day and said, hey, we're looking to hire New Hampshire. Would you be interested? And I took that ticket back in 05 and was with every candidate in the 08 election. Barack Obama, when he was walking down the street smoking a cigarette, nobody knew who he was. Hillary Clinton, Mitt Romney, John McCain would stop every town hall and have me talk about the one campaign efforts to save lives. Rudy Giuliani would grab your shirt. It was an amazing experience.
That's awesome.
So that was my intro to politics.
And the AIDS HIV issue was just something you became super passionate about and just decided to dive all into?
Again, it was in college. You saw 9/11. There was a notion of that, like, hey, it's a big world out there with a lot of challenges. Certainly things we need to be against, terrorism and evil, but also show what we are for. We're the United States. We have saved more lives, fed and freed more people around the world than any other country in history. That's amazing. We should celebrate that. I love that. And if we could can do more, this is what I became passionate about. And who was it? It was George W. Bush at the State of the Union, pounding on the podium, that announced the greatest and biggest HIV/AIDS program in the world, PEPFAR, which I later, cheered on the sidelines, became an activist with the One Campaign, and then later on worked at the State Department and reauthorized that program. So it's been a hell of a ride.
That's wild. So how did you make the move from New Hampshire to DC?
Yeah, primary ended. There goes the party, right? In 08. Hillary won, John McCain won. We were on to a general election. One move and the One Campaign moved me out of New Hampshire down to DC, where I managed their national operations. A lot of advocacy, in swing states and key states, and working Hill strategy and all of that. And that was amazing until again got word that Governor Huntsman was returning home from China, met with him in DC, and Geronimo, Forgotten Country, headed back home to New Hampshire for what was his presidential campaign. I think we started in May, primary was in January. Third place was, an interesting cycle. You learned what to do. You learned sometimes what not to do. You learn that, being the Republican that says, oh, I'm here to save you all from yourselves, may not be the best strategy. So was a wild ride, and then did some more foreign politics. Did some more foreign policy in DC afterwards. Worked for the senator of New Hampshire, Kelly Ayotte, for 3 years. Out of over a million votes in 2016, we lost by less than 1,000, but who's counting? And then got appointed
Do you work on the Hill on her official side or the campaign side or both?
Senate side, 3 years. A lot of it in New Hampshire, just because she was there in New Hampshire. We had a re-election. She lost, and then I got appointed to the State Department by President Trump at the Global HIV/AIDS program, where I reauthorized that through the House, Senate, signed into law by President Trump. Yay. Switched over, became a comms director for an entire bureau, traveled the world. COVID hit, that was kind of crazy. And then resigned on January 6th for jobs, not mobs. Thank you very much. And then launched my own bipartisan public affairs firm. My counterpart when I worked for AI worked for Shaheen, and he did Klobuchar and Biden. And we've been about 3 years in business right now, and so far so good. And then I got to go have fun with the New Hampshire primary. So
That's awesome, man.
happy ending.
What are you mostly working on right now? Like, what kind of issues is the it's it, I know obviously all of our companies have confidential clients, we can't say, but what is it that you're focused on at the moment?
Yeah, so we are bipartisan, but we are not doing campaign work. He's not going to work to defeat, his friends. I'm certainly not going to work to defeat my friends. We do a lot of corporate communications work, some reputation management,
Very cool.
maybe a little issue advocacy, depending on what it is. But that's a majority of our work. Had one client that was a, what's going on in New Hampshire, political intelligence type thing. But again, it is a younger man's game when it comes to some of the campaign work, and happy to say that we don't do that.
Nice. Well, I'm still doing it, as you know. And it is a young man's game. And now at 44, I, for the first time, am starting to feel a little tired. I feel like I'm a pretty energetic guy. You have a lot of energy. You're sitting there pounding Red Bulls on this thing. That's how I get through the day too, Red Bull and coffee. But for the first time this cycle, I'm like, God, maybe I've only got like a couple more cycles left in me. I don't know if I can keep up this speed.
But how many people you got with you now, Wes? How big is the firm?
90-ish.
That's pretty significant. That's pretty significant.
But I love the campaign side of things, but unfortunately, I spend the majority of my time now on the business itself. And I'm an accidental entrepreneur, I guess is the best way to say it. So I didn't go to school for this. I built this thing because I was trying to innovate politics and do things a little differently. And it just the problem with digital is that it just requires so much infrastructure. So the more you want to change, the more you want to do, the more people you got to hire to do it. We started with just, oh, I just need a designer and a web developer. And then your next thing you got to have account executives and then videographers and then data folks and then texting folks and email folks. And then more people you add, the more on the business side you got to have. So like COO, six bookkeepers. I mean, it's just wild, man. And I never meant to this podcast isn't about me. I want to talk to you. I never meant to grow a company of 90 people. It's just to do digital right and politics, whether that's on the political campaign side or on the issue advocacy side, which we do a ton of, you just have to have all these people.
I mean, it's makes sense. I love that you said you are an accidental entrepreneur. But I mean, you tell me, is this a politics company? Are you in or is this technology? I mean, it
That's
is changing every single day. I remember Mark Penn in 08 said, oh, don't worry about the Obama folks. They're all into Facebook. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, never mind that. You know, now Facebook, Twitter. I mean, your line of work, our line of work is just the world is changing every single day. I mean, how do you stay on top of it? I guess
it's hard because not only is the internet constantly changing, but the industry itself is changing very rapidly too. Like, so a very interesting conversation we're having at the company right now is, you know, really what is the difference between digital video and television, for example. So to my point about constantly having to add new things, television is becoming digital. And in the next 2 to 4 years, I don't think you'll have any difference at all because you'll be placing your television ads, you know, programmatically based on data sets, just like you do digital now. So now the question is, do we merge TV into digital because that's going to be the demand. And then it's what is virtual reality going to change?
Oh, sure.
So it's a constant battle of just figuring out what is the next way people are going to consume information and a way that we can then persuade them with that change. And it's hard to keep up, man, because on top of trying to pay attention to that, then you got to figure out the business side to that too. It's like, all right, if we're going to do that, how do we afford to be able to do that? Or is there anything we should now drop because that's just not important anymore?
Totally. I mean, this is the balancing act that I have done on a much smaller scale for 3 years that, yeah, I have a deep appreciation and admiration for, you know, the business and the technology and how do you merge that and sort it all out. It's wild. It's you got to love it. I mean, if you don't like it, you find out a lot of work, I guess. But yeah,
I love leading. I like leading the team. I love leading the people. I like the innovative side of politics. And I still have a love of political campaigns. The frustrating stuff is the business side of things, like HR. You know, it's like this person's got a problem today and you got to, it's just that side of running a company and leading is very, very difficult.
Yeah, I believe it. You know, anytime there's a human element involved, it can be emotional and there's a, you know, a give and a take and yeah, sometimes it's not always pleasure.
Well, now I feel like you're interviewing me. So tell me, I mean, you've been involved in a lot of campaigns, obviously the presidential campaign and coming up through New Hampshire. Do you have any favorite stories that you like to tell from the campaign trail?
I mean, I'm not sure which ones are appropriate here. Can you use obscenities on the show? Can we
100%
bleep some of this stuff out?
We can definitely delete afterward if you make me, but I always tag the explicit lyrics button on the podcast upload because I drop too many F-bombs myself.
I mean, you know, first off, you know, and you know, politics, I mean, it's such a human aspect. It is a personal aspect in New Hampshire, right? It is not just watching a TV ad. It is not just watching an interview. It is going to the town halls. It is shaking a candidate's hand, maybe more than once. It is having a human, you know, interaction and to watch even this last one. I remember going to a Nikki event. And don't know what was going on, but there were two women talking with her, and you know, one of the women got very emotional, was crying, and then, you know, Nikki, you could see her getting overwhelmed and getting emotional, and then, you know, she kind of pulled herself together and had to, you know, meet the next person, and, you know, maybe they had a completely different message. So it is such a range of emotion, pure raw emotion out there in New Hampshire, and some of it is funny, some of it is hilarious. You know, John McCain would famously open up town halls by telling two or three off-color jokes and then taking every question under the sun. He'd get up there and say, everybody, you know, I tried to join the Marines, but my parents were married, so I just couldn't get in. They wouldn't let me in. And everybody would laugh. And then some Marine would stand up and say, listen, Senator, we're a Department of the Navy, the men's department. And, you know, it was just a give and take there. It was funny. But yeah, you know, I remember, I was going to say the Huntsman campaign you mentioned.
Yeah.
Boy, those girls, They were amazing. To this day, would do anything for their father. And I remember once, it was a Friday afternoon. I said, let's go do a sine wave here in New Hampshire. And they said, absolutely love it. Let's do it. By the way, what is that? And I said, well, here in New Hampshire, we're going to get some signs. We're going to go on the corner and people driving home from work, they're going to see us with our Huntsman signs. And you know what? That's visibility. Maybe that, it's the name of the game here, in New Hampshire retail politics. So they grabbed some signs, went out there, and I'm telling them, New Hampshire voters, they're going to tell you the truth. We're going to give it to you straight. There's not going to be a lot of lies. That we cut through the nonsense, a little straight talk. You can promise that. And all of a sudden, on cue, truck comes by, guy leans out of the truck and yells, I would absolutely fuck you. And I go,
Whoa.
oh my God.
Whoa.
I go, girls, that was for me. Apparently, that was for me. They were laughing.
I do
They took
recall
it in
those girls
stride.
being pretty hot.
They took it in stride. They said, do me a favor. Don't ever have our mother do this. And I said, point taken. Understood. Your mother won't do it, but
Wow.
we're happy to do it. So yeah, sometimes there's some funny moments along the way. Sometimes there's some things that'll tug at your heartstrings. But a lot of emotion coming out of New Hampshire politics.
Here, I got a funny story because I hadn't thought about it in so long, and I haven't told this story on the podcast. To your point about John McCain, and how he used to try to be funny and tell jokes, he was on the stump here in South Carolina, and we were sent out to get video of him. We were on the other side, and he told a joke, and it's actually very pertinent in this week because he said, "You know what? We need to follow that old Beach Boy song and bomb,
Bomb, bomb,
bomb,
bomb,
bomb
bomb.
Iran." Okay, that was me. They got the video of that bomb, bomb, bomb Iran, and I put it up on YouTube, and that thing went nationally viral.
Oh, yes.
That's the first time I did anything in my career that I recall that went viral nationally, and I hadn't thought about that in years. But
I remember when in
that was
08 when
me.
he. Yeah, when he rolled out his campaign, there were people there with a banner. I mean, yes, protesters would always legendary stuff. Was at another town hall, where somebody stood up and said, "How long are we going to keep troops in Iraq? 10 years, 20 years?" And he goes, 50, make it 100 years. So long as no one's dying there, so long it's like Korea, where we're there, where no one's dying, but we are able to provide stability, I'm happy with that. Now, that moment went viral too. That became an Obama ad, which was 50, 100 years the senator wants to keep troops in Iraq. And in 2008, that's not where America was. Maybe not now. Maybe he had a valid policy point, but that's the politics of it all. So yeah, watch what you say sometimes. It can always be cut. And the Beach Boys, everybody knows the Beach Boys.
Man, I didn't realize New Hampshire was that rough, though. That sounds like something that would come out of the mouth of a South Carolinian.
Let me tell you, New Hampshire, you get diversity of idea. You don't know what you're gonna get. We got peaceniks, beatniks. You get your Bernie bros, Clinton country. I know more, hardcore, very butch, lesbians in the North Country. They're gonna tell you how great Donald Trump is and to get out of my life and let me. Li I mean, libertarian leaning. You have diversity of opinion and thought in New Hampshire. And it is appreciated. We're an early state. We're something of a purple state. And those town halls, you never know what you're going to get.
So
Wild, wild stuff.
do you think you are forever done with political campaigns, or could something drag you back into it?
I don't know. It is my drug of choice. I love it. Nothing gets me more excited than hearing someone talk about our democracy, our country, how the better days ahead. Here's the plan. Here's the path, and bringing everybody along. Big ideas, whether it's domestically, foreign policy. The life you get to live for you, your family, your future. That's always a magnet. That's always a draw. Listen, we're all going to be gone in, I don't know, 50 years, right? Maybe our names won't even be remembered in 100 years. But maybe some of the work that we did, small part, will help write those lines in the history books. And this
Agree.
is our chance, to shape our country, to shape our future. And it's always a draw. So
I
who
love
knows
it.
what happens?
This episode will go live before the South Carolina primary, so that'll be my last question. Any prediction for what's about to happen here?
Oh boy. Again,
I think it's a
we've never.
foregone. Is it a foregone conclusion? This is wrapped up. It's done deal.
Has anybody ever won Iowa and New Hampshire and then South Carolina before? I would say any other race, yeah, this thing is done. But
Weirder things have happened.
let's also be clear. You know, second place could be important if first place goes to jail. And we are in very disruptive times politically. You know, we have two very shaky front runners with maybe some age questions as well as legal questions. We're in a very weird part of the pool, uncharted territory here.
I don't expect anything to happen to President Trump, but I got to tell you, we're in weird times, so you just don't know.
You know, who knows? And then is there a third party? Is there a third
I'm
party?
not a Nikki Haley fan, so I'm a little biased over here.
Who did you like?
Oh, I mean, I'm a Trump fan.
Were
Um,
you Trump 2016?
I, I was I worked for Vivek this time around.
Right, that's right. Okay.
But I wasn't a Trump fan back in the day. As I say, my financial portfolio made me a Trump fan because I just everything worked for me, and it seemed like all the people around me under President Trump. So I became a President Trump supporter, even though I wasn't in the beginning. I'll just tell you that Nikki Haley and I have a past. So she's mentioned me a couple times in her book. So I'm
Oh boy.
I even if President Trump wasn't in this race, I would be an anybody but Nikki Haley person. I'd be a never Nickier. I never heard that one. I'm gonna turn
Oh
that.
my gosh. I've seen it on Twitter, to your point.
Oh,
Go ahead
really?
and post something. Yeah, a lot of DeSantis people have been using that hashtag.
Oh, have they?
Oh yeah.
I
Oh
didn't
yeah. I
know.
mean, it
I
became
got off
personal.
Twitter for mental reasons, for my emotional well-being. I deleted my Twitter account a couple years ago.
Choose life. Yes, you know, very smart.
Well, Matthew, I'd love to spend some time with you when I come to DC, man. This has been great. So I'll give you a shout when I'm up there soon.
Love it. Thank you. May the force be with you guys down there in South Carolina for that primary, and we'll see what comes out the other side.
All right, brother. I'll see you.
All right. Later.
Thank you for listening to Campaign War Stories. Please subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get new episodes sent straight to your inbox by subscribing at WesleyDonahue.com. I hope you have a phenomenal day full of positive vibes.